Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. It's Tuesday, the 10th of February. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. News comes today that federal agents yesterday raided a Georgia peanut processing plant linked to the nationwide salmonella outbreak that has prompted one of the largest product recalls in the history of this country. Yesterday's searches comes 3 days after Food and Drug Administration investigators said that the Peanut Corporation knowingly shipped salmonella products from its Georgia plant after tests showed that the products were contaminated. The Justice Department has opened a criminal investigation. More than 1,550 products have been recalled, but more importantly, a number of people have been sickened and died. 8 deaths and 575 illnesses since September. And some 75 companies, including Walgreens, Kellogg, and Safeway, have pulled hundreds of items from the shelves, and the list of products keeps growing. The U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, said over the weekend the recall of salmonella-tainted peanut products shows a need to modernize the U.S. food safety system and to create a single inspection system. What we have now are two different systems and not enough people, evidently, to inspect the products. And what's the federal responsibility? What's the state responsibility? And I guess the question is, how in the world can a company in good conscience ship products to consumers they must know will sicken them and could result in death? We'll talk about all of that this first hour of our program today and welcome your phone calls. We'll have two guests on the air. The first guest is joining us by phone. They both are Mike Taylor, research professor at the George Washington University School of Public Health and Health Services. His public policy research agenda focuses on policy, resource, and institutional issues that affect the success of public health agencies in carrying out their prevention missions. He co-founded and chairs the Steering Committee of the Food Safety Research Consortium and is a senior fellow with the Partnership to Cut Hunger and Poverty in Africa. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that today. The email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org, for you to join our conversation on this very important topic. And we thank you, Mike, very much for being with us.
Kathleen, happy to be with you.
I wonder how in the world a company, after it knows its products are contaminated and must know that they can cause illness or death, can in good conscience ship a product to the American consumer. How can that happen?
Well, this is in the 30-plus years I've been involved in food safety and looking at it from the government vantage point where I've worked in the private sector, I have never seen such a shocking episode and such a shocking set of events as has been reported here. I can't explain really why anybody would engage in such incredibly reckless behavior. You know, there are many companies, in fact, a lot of companies in the food industry have real food safety cultures. They take food safety seriously and they put in place systems to be preventive. This company clearly did not have a corporate culture that was committed to food safety, to say the very least, and was prepared to make decisions that I presume were driven by economics, by the desire to make a buck. Mm-hmm. And that's a tragedy.
We talk about what's going on with China. That was the focus last year. How about what's going on in America?
Well, no, this is no less reckless than intentionally putting melamine in infant formula.
Right.
I mean, this is knowingly shipping a product that is known to be dangerous and known to have potentially lethal effects, and it's criminal, literally criminal, and it's certainly justified that the federal government is conducting a criminal investigation here.
Mm-hmm. What were the federal agents looking for in their raid yesterday on this peanut processing plant in Georgia?
Well, I assume that they're looking for the most detailed records they can find of what happened, evidence that would try to explain what happened here. This might include processing records, and I know FDA has obtained some of the records that relate to the company's testing of their product. But I'm sure the federal criminal investigators are going even deeper than that to really try to understand what drove this. You know, what, for example, was the relationship between this company and its customers? What did the customers know about what was going on in this plant? That's another element of the breakdown here is that you had many companies purchasing product from this plant without holding this plant to an appropriate standard. What did they know? What should they have known about this behavior? I think is a fair question.
Mm-hmm. And it makes you wonder what kind of relationship they would have with other companies. Do they have any?
Well, again, it's I don't know firsthand what this company's relationships were with their customers, but it's common for there to be some effort, particularly by the larger brand name companies, many of whom were purchasing from this outfit, to have some oversight of what's going on in their suppliers' facilities, to know whether a company that's producing an ingredient like peanut paste is in fact following proper food safety procedures. In this case, that kind of oversight by customers, commercial customers, either was missing or obviously deficient.
Mm-hmm. The new U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, Vilsack, over the weekend said that all of this shows a need to modernize the U.S. food safety system and create a single inspection agency. Do you agree with that?
Well, in the long run, I do. I mean, I've worked at the Food and Drug Administration in a policy position. I ran the food safety program at the Department of Agriculture. I've seen it from both sides, and I do think that there are enormous gains to be had by ultimately combining these programs. But it's critical not just to make that a bureaucratic merger of agencies. The first thing we have to do really is modernize both of these programs, equip them to be much more preventive, much more science-based, and so we need to modernize them legislatively first and then consider how they might be put together. But in the long run, sure, there's no reason to have two separate food safety agencies in this country.
Mm-hmm. And what about, I'm a little confused about what was happening with state inspections. Are most states required to do food safety inspections, and is that a separate system?
Well, this is a really interesting and important part of this controversy because, every state has agencies that are involved in fact, play a critical role in food safety inspection and oversight, including in restaurants, in grocery stores, but also in food processing facilities. And this is a resource that in a proper, national food safety system, we would take advantage of and use that state-level resource in a very productive way. And in fact, Georgia was conducting inspections in the peanut facility under contract to FDA. So there is an attempt being made to leverage state resources to advance the National Food Safety Program. The problem is that if we don't do that right, if we don't have standards for what the states are supposed to do, if we don't have accountability, if we don't invest in improving the state's capacity, then that's not going to work very well. So this is an important part of the picture, and I think the long-term goal really should be really integrating state and local roles, building their capacity, and make them a very productive part of a preventive, national food safety system. We're not there yet, though, on that.
Mm-hmm. Professor Taylor, how difficult is it, considering how these products were so widespread, peanut butter is found in so many different products, how difficult was it, and what was the process of discovering that peanut butter from this plant was to blame?
Well, one of the ways in which the food safety system has made progress, actually, over the last decade is being able to detect outbreaks, meaning detecting clusters of cases that are related to a common cause. And it's done using modern tools of molecular fingerprinting, genetic fingerprinting of the bacteria that are causing people's illness around the country. Those fingerprints are put into a central database so they can be compared. And so investigators can link cases with a common cause. And then that provides the basis for tracking down what that common cause is. And so, that system worked pretty well. I mean, it could all happen faster. If we invested more resources in investigating these clusters of illnesses, we'd get to the common cause sooner. But that system worked reasonably well to get us to this Blakely, Georgia peanut plant. Of course, then the problem is, how do you track all the products that ingredient has been used in around the country? And that's another, huge challenge. And that's more difficult.
Mm-hmm. As a consumer of peanut butter, I'm sure you probably are, are you worried about what you eat? Do you expect that this list of products will grow?
Well, I suspect it will grow. I mean, the outbreak itself is not over. People are continuing to get sick. And I think we'll continue as food companies investigate where they've sourced their ingredients. We will get additional products listed, and so I think if a consumer has any question about the the product in their home, they should dispose of it. The government has gone to pains to make clear that the brand name peanut butters that you see on the grocery shelves were not produced in this plant, and therefore there's no reason to be concerned about those products based upon this episode down in Georgia. But beyond that, in terms of the many cookies and ice creams and so forth, again, the first thing to do is look on the FDA recall list. But if in doubt, I would say throw it out.
Right. The other thing, not that all life isn't precious, but they're sending these products to the most vulnerable, to children, right, to people in nursing homes, for heaven's sake.
Yeah. No, this conduct in this plant, you know, was just so high risk. And frankly, this is where I think the inspection system fell down. The Georgia inspectors, the FDA, should have recognized the high-risk nature of what was going on here, because it is a ready-to-eat product, meaning there's no more cooking that's going to kill bacteria. We've known from a past outbreak that salmonella can live for a long time in peanut butter, and this company was shipping the product to institutions where our most vulnerable people live. And when inspectors see insanitary conditions in a plant that's engaged in that business, that should be a red flag. There should have been much more swift enforcement action to stop that company from selling product out of that plant.
Mm-hmm. And the description in yesterday's New York Times of the plant, raw peanuts stored next to finished peanut butter, the roaster not calibrated to kill deadly germs, dispirited workers on minimum wage supplied by temporary agencies, put on uniforms at home, dragging contaminants. And the roof of the Peanut Corporation of America is an obvious risk. It's salmonella thrives in water. The roof is dripping. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, those are things. I mean, correcting those sorts of things, it's just the ABCs, the basics of food safety. And how, you know, this plant was allowed to operate, why it chose to operate under those conditions for so long, you know, is beyond me. But what again, here's where we need to look at reforming the system, because, you know, again, many companies have facilities that are well maintained, that are sanitary, and they have systems in place, for example, to be sure that the roaster is at the right temperature, or that other controls that ensure food safety are in place. Well, every company should be required by federal law to have those sorts of modern systems in place. And the government should be empowered through inspection and enforcement and other means to hold every company accountable for having the preventive system. It shouldn't be a matter of the government coming in and finding problems or testing the product and finding it contaminated. It should be a matter of the government holding the companies accountable for having systems, modern systems, that prevent these problems in the first place. And again, that's the major public policy reform that I hope this episode will help drive.
We have a full bank of phone lines. We'll start taking your callers here in just one moment. Professor Michael Taylor, research professor of health policy at the School of Public Health, George Washington University, is joining us the first half hour. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program, we found out just right before 9 o'clock that Senator George McGovern is on an airplane and will not be able to join us the next hour to talk about Abraham Lincoln. Darn it. Can you imagine what a disappointment? Senator McGovern on Abraham Lincoln, my kind of hour. So we're trying to reschedule that, and Rhonda's been busily on the phone. We are going to be talking about the alarming closing of bookstores in the state of Wisconsin, well-known bookstore in Appleton, the Schwartz Bookshops here in the Milwaukee area. What's happening with small bookstores that customers seem to love so much? Are we not reading? Are large chains gobbling them up? We'll be talking about that issue, important to many of you, the second hour of our program. All right, two phone calls on peanut plants, and we go to Peter from Madison first. Hi, Peter.
Hi. I don't remember, several years ago, Ford Motor Company was in court talking about an analysis that showed the cost of changing their product versus lawsuits that could result. I think it was may have been the Pinto. I mean, this is, of course, decades ago. But it was a clear economic analysis of the risk that was involved in changing their vehicles versus the cost of a lawsuit in case somebody died. And I wonder, a few things I looked online just prior to getting on, it points to New York Times and so forth about illegal aliens. And I'm wondering if it's just, you know, it became a cultural thing that these people really don't matter. And hence, it became sort of its protections for the workers, and it became sort of a cultural thing that it's super, super, super cheap labor, and we're not going to really care about what happens to them, and hence became a culture of a life doesn't really matter. And I'm just wondering if there is sort of a culture of we're just down to the dirtiest bottom dollar, and when these people don't count, how do other people outside buying the product count?
Right.
That's it.
Okay, Peter, thank you. Professor Taylor.
Yeah, well, again, the behavior of this company was reckless, at least, with regard to the safety of their customers. And in fact, the report that they shipped product knowing it was contaminated and not having any data, any results that suggested to the contrary, not even waiting for the negative result, which by itself was not sufficient, by the way, to provide assurance that the product was safe. I mean, it's almost intentionally putting customers at risk. So, I mean, there was a huge failure at a moral level, let's face it, in the decision-making of this company to simply not have, you know, that a commitment or a concern even about the safety of their customers. It's hard for me to explain it or understand it, but just on the face of it, that seems to be going on.
We go to Jim from Milwaukee next. Hi, Jim.
Yes, hi. It seems to me that we need to have uniformity in law enforcement, and we have to have the public demanding on a much more consistent and more frequent basis accountability. You know, in terms of government law enforcement, we complain about them, but we tolerate them, and we tolerate what they do, or more importantly, we tolerate about what they don't do. I was reading, to draw an analogy, I was reading in the paper about a young fellow who had no criminal record and evidently got drunk and killed two people with his pickup truck. And the paper says that he's going to be facing 50 years. And it strikes me in this Georgia case, here they've had 8 deaths, many more sick, and you wonder if they're going to be doing 50 years for their crime. And the final point being that we also know that banks launder drug money and chemical companies make the ether, which are constituents for heroin and cocaine, and export them. And again, you know, are these people going to be doing 50 years for all the people that are involved in deaths directly or indirectly due to drugs?
Right.
So we have to have accountability across the board, no matter how high or how low you are in status in the society. If you do things that lead to the death and injury of other people, you must be held accountable on an equal basis.
Well, and this case is raising the question of whether the criminal penalties in the food safety laws that FDA implements, whether those penalties are adequate, because for the typical criminal violation, the maximum jail sentence is 1 year. That's not sufficient for a violation that results in the death of a person. And I think there's going to be interest in Congress in stiffening those penalties. I think the interesting question for the criminal investigation that's going on is whether the investigators will limit themselves to the food safety law violations in considering criminal prosecution, and or rather look at the general criminal statutes, and including the state statutes that could conceivably permit prosecution for manslaughter. These are arguably homicides, given the reckless behavior involved and the ability to foresee the possibility of a person being injured. So I think you've raised a very important question. I mean, this whole issue of law enforcement and accountability, people don't think of that so much in the context of food safety regulation. And ideally, you know, you're not in, you know, food safety regulation has a scientific basis, and you create standards, and companies have their own motivation to meet those standards. And again, I think, you know, a huge chunk of the food industry has a business incentive to comply with standards. But for those who don't, there has to be the cop on the beat, you know, who's there often enough, has strong enough tools to penalize behavior. So you create an incentive for compliance for companies that don't have that as a matter of their own business culture or their market situation. Mm-hmm. And so I think we do need to really look at, you know, how we strengthen the cop on the beat to deal with bad actors like this company.
Yeah. Well, there was another case here with peanut butter a few years ago. Press reports that problems had started in 2004. There was a whistleblower from ConAgra Foods. They had found salmonella in peanut butter. The officials of that plant did not release their laboratory tests, and the FDA didn't pursue the records, so they couldn't confirm the report of salmonella. This calls into question the whole regulatory aspect, too, and strengthening this. How this just can't happen. And it happened. Didn't we learn from that episode? How could it happen on a bigger scale 3 years later,
That is a very discouraging scenario, and it does reflect the fact that the Food and Drug Administration has really, frankly, been beaten down as an enforcement agency. The culture of strictly enforcing the laws has eroded at FDA, and it's been, frankly, under an administration that was very anti-regulatory. I think the hope is that this episode, will have taught a lesson to the community, and hopefully be part of the basis for the new administration to change that, to create more of a compliance and enforcement culture. When problems like this are identified, they should, have strong action taken. Part of it, though, is Congress, which again has never given FDA authority to routinely access safety records in food plants. Mm-hmm. In order to get access to the records that document what's going on in a facility, FDA basically has to wait for somebody to be hurt. And so this is another example of FDA being hampered by obsolete laws. So Congress needs to act, and the agency then needs to strengthen its approach to inspection and enforcement.
And why wouldn't Congress give FDA that kind of authority?
Well, historically, the food industry hasn't supported that kind of authority. They do now. Most of the major trade associations realize that FDA needs the authority to require these preventive controls, which comes with authority to look at records. So that's changed, but only recently. And so the hope is that with this shift in the industry's approach, and there's now support for reform, with the public attention on this disaster in Georgia, one hopes that Congress will go ahead and act soon.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call, Jim. We have a couple lines open if you've been trying to join us. 800-486-8655 is our number. Bob from La Crosse. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on the total ineptness of Congress in this situation. About 2 days ago, there was a news piece, I think, on ABC showing the Congressional Committee investigating this with the head of the committee, a senator from Iowa, talking about it in impassioned tones and holding up a jar of peanut butter, saying how awful it was that we couldn't even make our children peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Well, as morally reprehensible as the whole problem is, it showed to me a complete misunderstanding of the problem, since at that moment in time, it was well understood that jars of peanut butter on the store shelves were not part of the issue. And here was the head of the committee who didn't understand the problem.
Well, I'm the last one who's going to get into the business of questioning the communication strategies of members of Congress. What I look for is for action on legislation. And I think that's really the test. And I think there were some good points made in that hearing about, these issues have been around for a long time. When is Congress going to act? I think that is the important question. And I think Congress needs to know that people demand action on these issues.
Mm-hmm. And there was something to what that congressman was saying, because the case we talked about earlier, the ConAgra in 2004 made Peter Pan peanut butter. So it's not beyond the realm of possibility here. And I'm sure people think about that when they're putting peanut butter together. What about before we let you go and just switch guests, same topic? The number of inspectors that are needed to really put teeth into this system, do we need to hire maybe part of an economic stimulus package, for instance, a whole lot more people to really investigate the food industry?
Well, there's no question that FDA needs more inspectors. It could easily use twice the inspectors it has. It needs to leverage the state inspectors more effectively. But inspection alone will never solve the problem. You have to think of inspectors as cops on the beat, and the question is, what do they do when they encounter problems? What do they focus on, number one? Are they able to focus on the most significant you know, potential problems, and then what action do they take when they see problems? And I think until Congress empowers inspectors to hold companies accountable for having modern preventive systems, as opposed to expecting inspectors just go around and discover problems, you know, you need to put together the policy framework, the preventive control requirement, with ample inspection to hold companies accountable for implementing those modern controls. It's that combination of things. Inspectors alone won't do it. But yes, FDA should have at least twice the inspectors they have now.
Mm-hmm. And one more question in email. Could you talk about the possibility of the contaminated pita product being sent out into the World Food Aid Program? Specifically, is the Plumpy Nut product at risk?
I am not aware that that our foreign food aid includes these sorts of peanut paste ingredients, but if it does, then USAID obviously needs to track this down and you know, take the same precautions that you know, that School Lunch is taking and that the other customers of this company have taken. I just don't know whether this product from this plant is in fact going into our foreign assistance.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Professor Taylor, for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Professor Mike Taylor, our guest, the first half hour research professor at the George Washington School of Public Health and Health Services, and he served in government as administrator of USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service from 94 to 96. Joining us now is J.D. Hansen, a policy analyst at the Center for Food Safety, which is a nonprofit public interest and environmental advocacy organization. J.D. is saying that it is obvious now, it's clear that the U.S. needs an independent food safety administration. We'll be taking more phone calls in just a moment for J.D. now. Hello, J.D. Hansen. Thank you so much for being with us. Oops. Well, we just need to link up with him again and... We just have, he's with us now? No, we'll hold on for a second and find him. Just to let you know, we've had a change in the second hour of our program today. Unfortunately, Senator George McGovern has written this wonderful book about Abraham Lincoln, who was a wonderful guy, and that conversation will have to be delayed for a little bit. Senator McGovern is on an airplane somewhere, so we'll try to schedule that. Actually, it'd be perfect to have it on Abraham Lincoln's birthday on Thursday. We'll see if we can make that happen. So we will be talking about Rhonda's been able to secure gas from local bookstores in the state of Wisconsin, and many of us who frequent those bookstores have received bad news in the past few weeks that they are closing or and they've been just vital parts of our community. So we'll talk about the future of small bookstores. J.D. should be with us now. Hi, J.D. Hansen.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Nice to be with you.
You have said that the Department of Agriculture has allowed ill and crippled animals to be slaughtered and released into our food supply. We've got a string of safety failures, tomatoes, peppers, spinach, green onions, salad greens, and now peanut butter. What's the answer? How do we make sure that this system is safe?
Well, I think the new administration and the new Congress needs to step in. Mm. What we've seen since 1972, virtually every year, regardless of whether it's been Democratic or Republican administrations, we've had major cuts in the funding for food inspection. There's a little bump up during the Clinton administration, but not enough to even bring it back anything close to what it was 30 years ago. And we have lots more food coming into the country. We've encouraged people to eat healthier, and that means fresh food, less processed. And the FDA has not been doing this job.
Why?
Well, I think it has been completely in the pocket of the food industry, and it's not wanted to regulate. You know, the philosophy has been, let's not regulate.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work on Wall Street, and it certainly hasn't worked in our food system.
Mm-hmm. And yet you would think there would be significant amount of outrage on the part of the public. There have been deaths here. There have been, and every year there are a lot of people sickened by foodborne illnesses. This is a particularly egregious case. I would think the public is pretty up in arms about this and almost insisting the FDA has to do its job.
Well, I don't think the FDA, with the current senior leadership, even in the full-time staff, can do that job. They are a drug agency that's main job is to speed approval of drugs, and they've been cutting funding for the food safety part of the agency. And not only that, they sort of look at food the same way they do drugs. So they don't want, you know, drug competitors to know what's happening. So everything that happens, even deaths, is a confidential business information with drug approvals.
Mm-hmm.
They've taken that same philosophy and applied it to food.
Hmm.
So it's confidential business information if Peanut Corporation of America fails a salmonella test.
Right.
Well, you know, when I take my car in to get it inspected, and when it fails an emissions test, a message goes directly to the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if it's good enough for my car, it ought to be good enough for company.
Yeah, I'm with you. Fail a salmonella test and then ship the product out. That's what's unbelievable.
Yeah, no, I mean, this, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, this, the CEO should spend a long time in jail.
Yeah, right.
That's for the FDA, you know, the FBI is now investigating and the Justice Department is investigating. I mean, this is criminal behavior
mm-hmm.
on the part of the company. However, you know, criminals tend to go where the cops aren't. And there are no cops on this beat, so they feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm. So we need, if this is the way the FDA is operating, are you calling for a complete overhaul of the system? I'm just trying to figure out how we can feel pretty confident, 99.9% confident that our food is safe, that it has been inspected.
Well, we're calling for the creation of a new food safety administration. Last week, Congresswoman DeLauro introduced legislation that, in our opinion, goes about halfway.
Hmm.
It would pull the food safety part of the Food and Drug Administration out of the Food and Drug Administration, and it would pull the seafood inspection service out of the Department of Commerce and make them one agency in Health and Human Services. That takes care of about 80% of our food. And then we need to look at what the U.S. Department of Agriculture is doing, because it's not doing such a good job either. We've had, you know, E. coli after E. coli problem. And, you know, most of these nasty bacteria that are getting in our nuts and vegetables come originally from sick animals.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got two different agencies with two different sets of standards, you know, one that looks at sick cows, and if they can walk into the slaughterhouse, it allows them to be slaughtered, and another one says, "Well, gee, wonder where it's coming from." Well, we know where it's coming from. You know, I mean, sick animals in some way, whether they were humans, whether they were birds, whether they are rats, or whether they were, poorly treated compost put on peanut plants, caused this latest outbreak.
Let's go back to phone calls. We have many of them. Pat is our next caller from Milwaukee. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this exemplifies the party in power that protects the business in not having regulators probe around and look for problems. And then also they were pushing for making suing a company like this almost impossible. You know, so if they want the business to take care of its, you know, let the market take care of itself, a good way to stop doing something wrong is you lose a million or five or 10 million and allow people to be satisfied with a lawsuit like that. So it is, it's only going to happen again until they see damages for doing something so negligent.
Well, I, you know, one of the problems with this process is that, yes, so the Peanut Corporation of America goes out of business. The people left holding the bag are their customers, and Peanut Corporation of America's customers, you know, aren't directly you and me, but they're the Kellogg's and the Clif Bars and the other people that bought their product. So they then get sued. Now, should their inspectors have been better? Absolutely. But you know, we have a situation here because the FDA wasn't doing its job. The companies that are doing their job are getting hurt too. Yesterday, all peanut sales are down, not just the ones that relate to these 1,000 pulled products.
And tell me a little bit more about the safety procedures of the inspection done by all these companies like Kellogg's, et cetera, buying peanuts. Do they have a rigorous set of inspecting or not?
Well, they're supposed to. I mean, Kellogg's was in the plant and signed off on it. And, you know, our organization brings suits against the federal government. We don't bring suits against companies. But I would, you know, if I were Kellogg's lawyers, I would be wanting to know exactly what we inspected and when and how, and whether we were, you know, deliberately duped or whether we just walked in and didn't do our job. Mm-hmm. But you know, the first step has got to be, you know, the federal government setting the standards that everybody's got to meet and making sure they meet them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's clear that the Georgia inspector didn't do her job, but the FDA, you know, is supposed to make sure that the state inspectors meet their standards. They didn't.
Thanks for the call, Pat. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Senator George McGovern was to have been with us the second hour of our program today. He has a new book on Abraham Lincoln, but unfortunately, he is on an airplane, so he can't speak with us. We are instead going to be talking about small bookstores and what's happened to them. A couple dearly beloved stores have announced that they are closing in the state of Wisconsin. So we'll be looking at that and asking the questions, are we not reading anymore? Are they being taken over? Or the demand is down because of large book chains? We'll talk about that the second hour of our show. All right, back to phone calls right now for J.D. Hansen, policy analyst at the Center for Food Safety, a nonprofit public interest and environmental advocacy organization. Gary from Duluth, Minnesota is next. Hi, Gary.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Some comments about some of the previous callers. First of all, corporations do not have a conscience. Humans may have consciences, but corporations are not. Even though they have been granted corporate personhood, they have all the privileges of humans, citizens, but they don't have very many of the responsibilities. Next point, foxes are in the hen house. In the FDA, at least in the pharmaceutical division, half the people who are making decisions are in the back pockets of the big pharmaceutical industry. So the decisions they make are definitely colored in the favor of corporations. Lawsuits are part of the business expense. I know I happen to be a holistic mental health care practitioner and know hundreds and hundreds of people in just my small practice that have been terribly damaged by the legal drugs, prescription drugs, that most of us physicians and psychiatrists prescribe, which does damage in a subtle, chronic fashion. Not too many people, unless they're overdosing, die suddenly, so there isn't the same outrage of the harm that's done to people's brains from legal prescription drugs since the effects are chronic. So I think that it's kind of a failed system. A good book that your listeners might want to look at is a book called The 100-Year Lie. It's about the 100 years of the FDA, which originally was developed in 1906 under the name of the Pure Food and Drug Administration. Mm-hmm. So that would be a good book to follow the gradual corruption of the FDA. I'll take my, if there's any responses from your guests.
Oh, I'm sure there'll be a response. Thanks, Gary. J.D.?
Well, one of the things we've called for is a clean sweep of those members of the Food and Drug Administration that have clear ties to agribusiness. And we really need to start fresh. It will be the best indicator of whether the Obama administration is doing that is who it will appoint to head the food safety part of the Food and Drug Administration, and we hope if Congress changes the law, the new Food Safety Administration, if they appoint someone who used to be the executive of Parnell Peanuts, we'll know they're not doing that.
I would imagine
the kind of job we expect them to do. You know, if they appoint someone, both Democratic and Republican administrations have tended to appoint, people, even good people that worked for agribusiness. Your previous spokesperson, mm-hmm. who I didn't disagree with anything you said, but used to work for Monsanto.
Hmm.
And we really need a clean sweep, of people whose credentials are so impeccable mm-hmm. that when they stand up there and speak, no one has to wonder whether they're more interested in promoting the corporate interest or the public interest.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Gary, so much for your call. Let's go to Mike from Seneca next. Hello, Mike.
Hello. Good morning.
Hi.
Say, real quickly here, I would hope that your programs on public radio would stimulate the public enough to, if they get excited about these topics, to call their legislators and tell them about it, because I think that could really get some numbers there and get some action. The other thing was I met a guy that worked for Archer Daniel Midland some years ago, and the reason I called is just hit the nail on the head. He was telling me that their company imports and collects ingredients for such things as seasoning, flavor enhancers, and preservatives, and a whole host of things that go in the processed foods. And before it goes in the processed foods, it gets processed and turns into the ingredient category, and then the people such as Kellogg and Bush Beans and Betty Crocker and those, they buy this stuff to put into their final product for the consumer. Well, the shocking thing was that he told me, for example, there are ingredients they can't grow in the United States, so they import them maybe from Brazil or Japan or different places like that, but they're not inspected at all. Now, they could have a trailer number on a tag, like a SKU or something, that would follow this product right into the hopper to blend in with seasonings. But he said once it's in the hopper, you almost lose control of it. But they could, if they got it to the point before it got dumped, they could have all this data entered in a computer and do it by batch number. And then when the batch goes out, it could be re-tagged again, whether it be organic or non-organic, whatever mm-hmm. the case may be, and then it would get to its destination. But I was shocked. Now, this was a while ago.
All right, let's get a response from J.D. Hansen.
Well, we advocate that we need to be able to trace the safety of the food from the farm to the fork. You know, I would like it to be able to have that on that code on the product that this came from, you know, the coffee bean cooperative in Brazil, and then it went here, and then it went there. And so you'd be able to tell every single step of the way. And, you know, we're not doing a good job with inspecting what comes into the country. We inspect about 2% of produce that comes across the U.S. border.
2%? Isn't that something? 2%.
And, you know, it is just crazy. But, you know, we need more inspectors. We need well-trained inspectors. We need people at the FDA that understand the new novel foods that are coming down the pike. We're expecting within the week that the FDA will approve the first genetically engineered salmon. Now, frankly, they don't have the staff that understand the issues of food safety in salmon, and they're probably not going to require extensive testing.
Mm-hmm.
They're treating this first food that will go in, you know, this genetically engineered animal that has essentially an eel gene stuck into it, but people haven't been used to eating. But they're treating it like a drug. We wouldn't even know it's in the pipeline, but for the fact that the company wants to tout that it's in the pipeline to get their stock price up. FDA is treating it as a drug that they have to keep secret. You know, this is not what folks want. Folks want transparency.
Of course.
Throughout the system, they want to know that it's safe, whether it comes from Brazil, China,
right.
India, or Georgia.
Right.
And, you know, we now have, I mean, it's pretty hard for us to go to the Chinese and say, hey, you've been having contaminated food.
Mm-hmm.
We need a system that makes our food safe wherever it comes from.
And when you talk, J.D., about the percentage of food being tested coming in from out of the country, 2%, which is unbelievable, what about food produced in this country? Is it a lot more than 2% or not?
No.
It's not.
You know, the peanut corporations of America or other food establishments can expect to see an inspector about once every 6 years on average.
Hmm.
And, you know, that is, you want to know that your food has been prepared safely. You know, you don't want to be
Seems reasonable.
You don't want to be eating, you know, I mean, my father's in an assisted living place. You know, the first thing I did was went over and see what they had.
Oh.
Because they set out these snack bars.
Oh.
You know, and fortunately they didn't have any of the brands that are so bad, but other places do.
Right.
So, you know, it shouldn't require having, you know, a son who's in the business of food safety to make sure you're safe.
Exactly.
You know, the FDA and, you know, your state should be doing it. And, you know, in this case, your neighboring state, Minnesota, has a good pathology lab that picked up on this faster than some other states.
Hmm.
You know, every state should have a good pathology lab, and the FDA needs to make sure that's possible.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike, very much for the call. We go to Drew next from Palmyra. Hi, Drew.
Oh, yeah, I'd just like to comment. As a farmer, I work at a fish farm, and we process our fish on site. As long as consumers, you know, are looking at cost as the only criteria in purchasing foodstuff, do you see this as the true problem? And maybe local food sources could be the answer, but, you know, we're facing all of our fees, you know, for state inspection and food processing, you know, they all doubled. And is this higher government cost just hurting the solution to the problem, which may be local food sources? Could you answer that question, buddy?
Well, you know, the problem is you've got farmers following good practices, and then you've got some renegades that aren't. And you're paying your fees and you're getting inspected, but if your competitors aren't paying their fees, there's one plant of Peanut Corporation of America in Texas that wasn't even registered at all. So So, you know, if you have a system where the bad actors don't have to pay the fair cost, then you can't compete against them. So we need to have a system that lets the honest farmer and the honest food processor not be penalized. Right now, the honest farmer, the honest food processor is being penalized by the bad actors.
Mm-hmm. And heavens knows there are many, many, we should make mention of them again, honest farmers and food processors.
Oh, absolutely. And what you as a fish farmer don't want to have happen is all of a sudden, a new fish product comes out that is ostensibly cheaper to produce, this, salmon on genetically engineered steroids. That not tested at all, competing in the market, maybe at a lower price than your fish.
Mm-hmm.
You've got millennia of data that it's safe to eat. We have no data.
Yeah. And on that note, we have to end the show. J.D., thank you so much for being with us. J.D. Hansen, our guest this half hour. And we thank Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, Rob Schroeder for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.